Welcome to a very special episode of First Gens. This is a podcast about first-generation Americans and filling in the blanks beside the hyphen.
I'm Perrin.
And I'm Sky.
And we just want to go around the table just to introduce everyone. If you can just say your name and what organization you're with, that would be great.
Sure. My name is Oliver Merino. I am a member of a grassroots organization here in Charlotte called Comunidad Colectiva. Our other hats as well. I work for Charlotte Center for Legal Advocacy, and I'm a board member of the Latin American Coalition.
My name is Allison Avent. I'm of counsel with Community Immigration.
Name is Sherrod Seward. I wear many hats, but today I'm a partner at Queen City Immigration Law.
My name is Sam Smith. I also wear many hats. I work at Carolina's healthcare system, but I'm here today representing International House of Charlotte.
Awesome. We're so happy to have you guys. This is our first ever kind of Facebook, Instagram live situation, and we're just really happy to have you all here because we just wrapped up our season one, and we actually wrapped that up in July. And for us, we just felt that there's so much going on within society, within politics, within our community on a regular basis that we couldn't ignore this topic. We felt like it was necessary for us to not only bring like-minded individuals, but people who are making a real impact in our community right now. Because what's happening with DACA, what's happening with just immigration in general, can sometimes be very disheartening. And obviously, as first-generation Americans, we come from immigrants. We are born into or born of immigrants in our families, our closest loved ones are immigrants. So it was just really important and necessary for Sky and I to do this and bring you all together. So we're just happy to have you.
Thank you.
All right, so we're gonna jump right into it. So this is gonna be more so of a round table kind of discussion. Okay, so we're gonna ask kind of general questions to the entire table. If you have some feedback or you feel that, you know, you want to respond to that specifically, go right ahead. We just ask that you allow someone to finish speaking before you start, and we'll just kind of keep it flowing, all right? All right, so DACA. So for everyone who's not familiar with DACA, everyone around this table is so familiar with DACA, but for those who may not be our listeners, DACA is a Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. So those within that program or in the program are referred to as DREAMers. That kind of links to the American dream and those being of immigrants, children who are brought to America illegally is kind of how they've been referred to in the media. Personally, no human being is illegal to me, but that's neither here nor there. So we just kind of want to get on a few topics. So what does the DACA program mean to you all in your organization?
I'll go ahead and jump in. So I'm a partner at Queen City Immigration Law. Of course, we're right on the front lines with it. And so even with us, it can mean different things. I focus on our business and investment-based visa practice, so you wouldn't think it would affect us. But I'm already seeing the increased enforcement and fear around DACA taking workers off of construction sites, taking people that are providing technical assistance and thinking about, hey, we're going to take our talents elsewhere. And so even on the business and investment side of DACA, it's affecting those business owners. So it's one of those things, even on that end, you're going to see a lot of pushback with the legislature to keep those talented workers working.
Okay, and for the family-based situations, I've seen a lot of fear as well. There have been a lot of community chats about just what does this mean? Where do you go from here? And I think a lot of the time, it's basically making sure that the information is given that's important for people to know, okay, hey, this program has ended, but we still need to push for the DREAM Act. We still need to push for different legislation coming through to help people to move forward. So that's what I've seen.
For the organization that I work in, I just started working there, but I've been doing community work for a while. Part of my job is, one, supporting the custodians of unaccompanied minors, and then the other part is making sure that our immigrant community knows their rights, whether they're documented or not. As a member of Comunidad Colectiva, we've been trying to organize since the election results to figure out locally how can we make sure that people are protected. Many of the people that are members of the group have been organizing in Charlotte for a while, so they're not new to all of this. Personally, I have deferred action, so but one thing to understand is that, you know, there was a life before deferred action. Like, we were here before it, and regardless of if it's taken away or not, like, we're still gonna be here.
So, quick question for you, Oliver. So you mentioned, like, Comunidad Colectiva has been kind of hitting the ground running since the elections. Why did you all feel like that was something that was essential and needed, you know, right post-election season?
Well, I think for a lot of folks that were surprised of what happened in the election, I think we were too, at least I was. But I wasn't surprised at that this country would elect somebody like that, because it's part of, you know, the xenophobia and the racism. It's part of this country. And especially living here in the South, like, you feel it. It's not something that you can get away from. But I think that there was right after the election, a lot of people were taken aback, not really knowing what they were going to do. And organizations, I think, locally, so they were not stepping up and providing a space for people to first just digest what happened and what they were feeling. And so in the beginning, it was just, we had no name. It was just people that already knew each other called for a meeting. It was somebody opened their business, and it was about 30 people that showed up. And that was 2 days after the election results. And so it was mostly in the beginning as a way to be in solidarity with people. Yeah. And then later, as we saw the changes in enforcement, how do we make sure that our community here in Charlotte and our city hall responds adequately and understands that even though immigration, it's a federal issue, we also have a responsibility locally to protect the people that are here.
Definitely. Well, for me, I don't have much to say on the topic because officially International House haven't released a official statement in regards to that. I know that it's something that they are working on because they deal with a lot of immigrants and a lot of people on the international front that are coming here to America for their American dream. So once whatever that write-up is out, then I'm able to speak a little bit more on International House stands on that.
So what are some efforts that your organization or businesses are doing to educate those in the program and then those as well in the general community at large?
Okay, well, first for Queen City Immigration, we've worked with Comunidad Colectiva, I think it was last week, just to get some information out to people and let them know what it means now, what remedies are available, and how to move forward. And I think the biggest thing is getting the word out and letting people know. So also at our firm, we're also providing assistance for anybody who needs to renew their actual DACA.
And I can talk further on that. So what we decided to do as a firm is have a DACA drive. We found two resources that can help with assistance. One that you can apply for a sponsorship for your filing fees. And the other one, there's a organization we partner with called Crowd Justice, which can help raise legal fees. We've actually reduced the fees in half about what we do for DACA. And on September 30th, we're going to have a seminar to where we're going to allow people as many to come in as many we can service to get their DACA renewed right then and there. And we'll have the official location probably on Monday. And until then, you can go to www.qcilaw.com/DACA for the information now and to register to get in line first for the DACA renewal.
Can you elaborate a little bit more so? Like, I'm sorry, did you mention the deadline for renewal? And can you kind of elaborate on like why that's so important?
Mm-hmm. I'll let Allison do that because that's her practice.
The deadline for renewal is October 5th, and that is only if your DACA expires between September 5th and March 5th, 2018. So if it is after that time, it is no longer available. If it's prior to, if you've already filed, you can still move forward. So the October 5th deadline is very, very important for DACA holders who may have their DACA expire. So that's why it's very important for all of these activities to go ahead and sign up and make sure that you can renew, because after that, you only have 2 years after you renew before the program officially ends for everyone. And that's why we push also for the Dream Act.
And I will also encourage, in addition to Queen City immigration law, also encourage people to reach out to International House. They have a the Gentle Immigration Law Clinic. It's very low cost, and they pretty much will walk you through the steps or give you information on what you need if you're affected by this particular program. So I would encourage those that are listening to reach out to International House and see how they can connect with their law clinic.
And what's the website for International House?
Well, www.ihclt.org.
Well, so as you can see, there's all kinds of things happening in Charlotte and surrounding area to make sure that people that do have to renew do so. What we did as Comunidad Colectiva after it happened, after the decision came, which wasn't too much a surprise because that was a promise that the president made before he got into office. And even when he said that, you know, he was going to have a kind heart, I think we know based on his actions that that's not the reality. And so we knew that there was a possibility, but I think it caught a lot of people by surprise. And right after, I think the main focus right now is getting the people that need to renew. And then after October 5th, I think we're going to see a lot of mobilization here in the state, because I know that there's been conversations happening, and then nationally for a push for the Dream Act. Right after the announcement was made last Tuesday, we saw that there were people that were just collecting funds for people that did not have them at the time, because it's $495, and I don't know if you got it like that, but I don't.
Yes,
and so it's, you know, it's something that just, you know, it's a hurdle for a lot of people. And so as a group, we just created a GoFundMe, and we asked for $5,000, which would cover 10 people. And within at least 4 days, we had that. And all this came from community. You know, we didn't reach out to the grant makers that asked for 501c3 status, right? We didn't reach out to the big funders, because we are a community group. We don't qualify for many of those things, but we know that the resources from the community are there. And so at least 10 people have already gotten those funds. As the Charlotte Center for Legal Advocacy, we also have a DACA renewal clinic on the 23rd and 24th. And the main thing is, regardless of where you go, like, you know, if you know somebody that has DACA, you know, let them know that they need, just look at your permit or look at your driver's license, because usually once your driver's license expires, that's when your DACA expires. So that's the focus now. And then, like I said, after October 5th, that's when I think you're going to see a lot of focus on what happens in Congress. And usually, you know, right now, there's a lot of people saying, like, it's up to Congress to do something. But I think Congress just doesn't act, right? Like something just doesn't happen. People have to make that happen. So hopefully people here locally can also understand that.
Now, question for you. Will you guys be doing another drive to raise more money to help another group of 10? Or
so... for Comunidad Colectiva, that was our goal, to cover 10. I know that we just didn't have the infrastructure or the capacity to keep collecting, and so we ended the drive. But the Charlotte Center for Legal Advocacy, there were some community members from here, from Charlotte, that said, how can we do something? And so if somebody donated $25,000 to the organization, and any contributions are going to be matched. So if somebody donates $495, that covers somebody and another person too. And so those funds are there, and we're just letting folks know that regardless of where you go, there's resources for you. You just gotta, you know, sometimes it's hard for people to ask for help like that, but they're there, and hopefully people take advantage of it.
I mean, it's literally like the power of community. So I think that's amazing that you all, you know, not only thought of that, but just basically crowd fundraised. I think that's amazing that you all took initiative.
We reached 5,000. I mean, we didn't reach 25,000, you know, like that. But there's people that in the community that, you know, sometimes we think that they're not as involved as they should be. These are people that have resources, like, you know, and that can get things done quicker. And at least a segment of the Charlotte community understood that they have a responsibility to their neighbors.
Right.
And that was something that I think I didn't expect, and it was a good thing to see. Mm-hmm. So hopefully going forward, it's not just about the money, but it's how do you get plugged in into whatever organization. It might be the International House, or it might be with attorneys, helping them, how do you support your clients or local grassroots organizations. So there's, the work is there. People just gotta step up too. Yeah.
It's like everyone working together. Like, I love that everyone around this table has something like different to offer, but all with a common goal, which I think is so vital. So my next question, so we've talked a little bit about the DREAM Act. If y'all can elaborate a little bit on that and kind of forecast what you think the future for DACA is.
Well, I'll go ahead and start. I think let's first talk about what kind of the DACA is. What it is a delay of enforcement. So the reason why the election of the president is so pivotal to immigration laws, because it's an enforcement issue. So what DACA is Obama said, we're not going to enforce deportation on these particular group of people. So that allows them to work and go to school and be part of the community, which might have to, which is going to help save them when Congress has to vote, because they have to do something. What, you know, Trump did by taking it away is bad, but it's also good because it's going to have to force action, because there's going to be too much pressure coming from all over the place. And one of the things I want to point out is, like, when we're doing kind of like civil pressure just to get reaction, now the immediate reaction is in the enforcement. So say here in Charlotte, we have an issue because the city of Charlotte, you know, what they call is like a sanctuary city. That just means that they're not going to enforce removal stuff. But the county is signed up with their sheriff department to ask, what's your status when you're getting arrested? And so that's the thing, is you got to start from the city enforcement to the county enforcement to the state enforcement. Because if the federal government says, like, hey, we want you to enforce that, but they don't get state resources, they're only going to be able to be so effective. And so that's where you have to start first. But as far as the DREAM Act goes, something's going to have to be done, because there's just too many entities and communities and institutions that are affected by this, not just people that they think are illegal, but there's really probably high up people. You never know. It might be somebody's CEO that's hiring 50 people that is on DACA. You just never know. So that's why something's going to get done, which is a good thing of, you know, having him pull it away, pulling the safety net away, because now we have to do a change. What it's going to look like, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think the question is, as you were saying, there's, you know, in terms of public opinion, most people, I think, see the young undocumented folks as, you know, favorably, mostly favorably, that they came here, quote unquote, no fault of their own, right? And they should be able to stay here. How they see the other part of the population that is undocumented, they don't look too kindly on the parents, right? And so that's a narrative that as a group we don't play with, like, that we don't accept that, like this narrative about the good immigrant and the bad immigrant, right? Who gets to stay here and who is going to get the brunt of the enforcement? One thing to understand is that, you know, the DREAM Act, it's 10 years old. Like, it's more than 10 years old. It was first introduced in 2001. And both political parties have played a role in making sure that it did not happen, that it was not passed. In 2010, we were very close, but it was the Democrats that derailed that effort. And then afterwards, you know, oftentimes people think that Obama kind of just gave this gift to our community, but he was pressured by the young people who went out into the streets, they pressured the legislators, and that didn't work in Congress. And so they understood that there was this thing called deferred action, that it was possible to pressure the president. And like I said, both political parties have responsibility on this situation. You know, we had more deportations under President Obama than any other president. And so right now, I think it's not just to see this issue about Republican and Democrat, but about values and people. That's something that is missing. Whatever this legislation comes out to be, you know, people are advocating for a Clean Dream Act. That means that DACA should just get written into law and with no type of enforcement, interior enforcement or border protection, so-called border protection, which means more militarization of the border, which is all, if you look at, if you have ever been to the border, if you look at the data, like that border is already secure, you know, like we don't need more military in the border. The type of conditions that the people along the border are facing are just, you know, horrendous. And so that's something that, at least for myself, I'm not willing to kind of sacrifice my own stay in this country or like, you know, for somebody else getting deported or being over-policed. And so hopefully whatever comes out, people listen to the people that are directly impacted by it.
I just want to piggyback off of something that he mentioned to say that it's been both sides of the political aisle that have resulted in the DREAM Act not going through. And so I think it's both sides know it needs to be done. The problem is what we found out this time too is that people don't really know their self-interest, right? So this is really a messaging war. You have to have a message to get this done that both sides base can tolerate, right? And so that's why I think we all need to come together and kind of like, you know, figure out which each community's actual issues are, because everybody knows what needs to get done. But it's just about how can I serve this in a message that doesn't, you know, hurt the base on either side. You know, and that's kind of how we got into this mess in the first place. I think a lot of us know that a wall doesn't make any sense. But if nobody knows about contract, how much it costs and stuff like that, it sounds nice, right? So we need something that sounds nice, that just to get this done, that it satisfies the base of both sides.
I mean, I thought it was just so interesting that yesterday when the news, or I mean, it wasn't really news. It was President Trump, you know, outside of, what is it, like the airport base at the White House or something. Like all you could hear were like planes like flying by, and it was just very distracting anyways. But my point is that, you know, they asked him about DACA and they asked him about amnesty and they asked him about, like, I guess the border wall. They asked him about the wall, or I feel like he just kind of threw that in there. So what we ended up getting from that distracting conference was him still being lukewarm, not giving any like real direction, still saying that, oh, like he supports, you know, it was quoted that he supports legislation that would protect young undocumented immigrants from deportation and would deliver a massive increase in border security, but not with a wall on the southern border. So it was just, I got so many mixed messages, no like real clear end. And I feel that, I personally just feel like so, just, I don't know what to really like predict and foresee because it's been so up in the air. So that's why we kind of wanted to like open that to you guys and see like what your take was as well. Does anybody else have anything to add on that?
I mean, I think that there's been a push for years to have immigration reform because the entire process is just complicated, confusing, and oftentimes outdated. There are some parts of the statutes that say you have to find job seekers in a newspaper. Like nobody uses the newspaper, people use Indeed now. So the point is, when you get to these mixed messages and trying to interpret, you know, what exactly is being said, oftentimes you will find that it's nothing is being said. It's just a circular loop. That's why it's very important to be active in the community, to say and continue to pressure lawmakers, state, local, even federal, to do something, because what is happening now affects a massive amount of people, and what could potentially happen later still affects a massive amount of people. So to see a press release, to see these types of things and still not get any answers, this is where we are here to say, hey, no, this is what is going on with me. Mm-hmm. I need you to focus on what's going on with me and then continue on from there.
Yeah. And I'll just say, just to piggyback off what everyone else have said, people just have to educate themselves or find the resources that will get you educated. I think that's really the true answer behind all of this. She mentioned about the whole the immigration process, or just the process to become a citizen, is really, really hard. And they put a lot of confusing information in those documents to throw you off. I know when I was in the process of becoming a citizen, I was a freshman in college. My dad threw the paper in front of me. He said, fill it out, I'll pay the money, and it will make you a citizen. I didn't understand nothing that was on that paper. But by God's will, I was able to get through the process and to become a citizen. But it takes almost a year. You know, that's the other problem. So if this reform does pass, what plan do they have in place to make the process easier? Because even if the reform passed, the process for people to become citizen or the dreamers to become citizen, that may be a complicated process. So we'll give you this, but then we're going to make this tougher for you. You still won't have the freedom that you need in this country. So I just feel like people really need to, you know, educate themselves or get with organization that will educate them on the whole process.
And I think, you know, also one thing to point out is not everybody that wants to become a citizen is able to, right? Like oftentimes you hear this like phrase of why don't they just get in the back of a line, right? Why didn't they just do that? Just do it the right way. But for a lot of people, and you know better than anybody, because you do this for a living, like that's not a possibility at all. Like you don't have that possibility to become a citizen or a resident of this country.
Can you elaborate on what, like, why that can be so difficult for certain people?
There's a lot of different situations. Sometimes it's criminal background. Sometimes it depends on how long you've been in this country. Sometimes it's, you know, any sort of issues that could come up that could be a bar to your naturalization process. And that's why it's important to have someone look over, especially attorneys, before you send in these filing fees, before you pay all this money, and, you know, to someone even in the community, we advocate against notarios and people like that, because there are things that bar you from getting your citizenship, and so it's good to know that.
The other thing I would say is the cost. Mm-hmm. It is very expensive to become a citizen, because you have to get a passport photo, that costs money. You have to go get a fingerprint, that costs money. They're doing your background check, that costs money. By the time you look, you're spending $1,200 just to become a citizen. So that's one of the bigger barrier is the cost. And people that are here illegally are really working hard to take care of their family, or working hard to take care of their family wherever their family is from, more so than focusing on spending $1,200 just to become a citizen. So that's part of the barrier too, is the cost that comes with becoming a citizen.
One thing to point out too is that, you know, oftentimes this idea that like this country has no problem if you're undocumented as long as you pay taxes.
<It's> so true.
They don't care. I mean, like, you know, people say undocumented immigrants don't pay taxes. Like, you pay sales tax, property tax if you have property. The IRS gives you a ITIN number to file your taxes regardless whether you're documented or not. Like, before I got DACA, I was working and I filed my taxes because I needed to file them. And if I didn't have my taxes, then at the end of the year I was going to get a notice from the IRS, because they know who you are. You know, some people do work under the table, but, you know, sometimes you don't have that possibility. So, you know, there's like a whole underground economy to this country that people are not willing to recognize, mm-hmm. right? And so they are good with getting the labor, but not recognizing the human being. And that's what I think needs to change in this conversation. Like, this country has exploited immigrants for a long, long time, right? At some point, not everybody's an immigrant. Some people came here by force, right? As slaves, or enslaved people, and there were Native Americans here before, but everybody else, you're from somewhere else. Like, your people are from somewhere else. And, like, if you know, often, like, why don't they just come the right way? Like, how did you people come here, right? They came here pretty much, like, at some point, and you can elaborate on this. You just have to show up. right? And the rules of this country, or like the guidelines, they favor certain countries, right? Mm-hmm. So all this, these conversations of like who gets to stay here, right? This country was for certain people. Many of those people were white Europeans, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody else was not really embraced. And even some of these groups, like I understand, did face discrimination, the Irish, the Polish, other folks that came here as well. But ultimately, they were accepted because, you know, they all share one thing, right? Their skin color. So anyway, this is another program. So
I would like to just kind of talk about what he's talking about. It's just like, I don't think people realize that most visas are non-immigrant, which means they're not a direct pathway to citizenship. And also about certain countries are easier to get here as a visitor. So for example, if you're British, you don't really need to go to any protests to get here. But say if you're a West African, matter of fact, I'm involved in a lot of West African business. There was a conference in California that was around African business. They got zero of their visitor visas approved. So I'm involved with a conference here to where my job, we're on sponsors to make sure we do everything possible to get those B visas approved. Like we've had to go to the state, to the city of Charlotte, get all these letters together, say like, look, our whole state is behind us. Please let them get here to get these visas. And here's another thing to think about is a lot of the professional visas aren't immigrant visas. It means you can't get a green card off of H-1B, which is the employer visa. A lot of the corner stores where owners are, those are E-2 investment visas, but you still can't get a green card off of that to get citizenship. So I want people to realize that it's not just illegal people that came, you know, on a boat or something like that. It's people that came here to do jobs, be artists, be investors, and things of that nature.
And one thing to elaborate on that is almost half of the people that are here undocumented came here with a visa. Like when people say, why didn't you just come the right way? They did come the right way, and they, you know, they stayed because this country does provide opportunities for people. But as you said, like some people do have the means to come here through a visa. You know, you have the funds, the proper resources to come here. For a lot of people, one thing that, you know, draws them to this country is the economic opportunity. Right, my family came here, but we could not qualify for a visa because in Mexico you need to show that you were not gonna stay in this country, and we were definitely gonna stay. And so, you know, we didn't qualify for a visa. And so, one thing to take into account is many of these countries, like they are, they're facing conditions where they have no other means but to go somewhere else, or other options but to go somewhere else. And you think about, they're risking their lives, right? They're going to places they don't know. They don't know what's going on the other side, that things are going to be better. But they are here coming with a hope that they are. And not everybody takes that decision, right? And so they're coming here for a valid reason, like the Italians came or the Germans came. And some of these countries, especially in Central America, have been going through a lot of turmoil because of also the involvement of this country in the affairs of those countries. And so it's this whole issue of immigration is not an issue, and it's hard to understand. And so that's why people, I think, if they don't have the right information, they're quick to make a judgment without thinking about the person and the complexity of this issue.
Definitely. We're already like coming to an end, sadly. I know, it flies, right? Time flies when you're talking about immigration fun. So what we're gonna do is just kind of jump and ask a few specific questions for each of you in regards to your organizations. All right, so Queen City Immigration Law. So two questions, and you can answer however you'd like. So how can both legal and illegal immigrants feel safe, not only like within the Charlotte community or beyond, and that's coming from like a law perspective? And then what legal rights should each immigrant know? Like what's kind of, if you had to give a few bullet points in like a situation, what are those bullet points that every immigrant should know?
Well, first, I'm a firm believer of you should not live your life in fear. That being said, one of the things that, you know, we at Queen City Immigration have said, even from way back when we had our conference in December, was make a plan. If you know that it's a possibility that ICE or remove there could come, or for whatever reason, make a plan. There's also power of attorney workshops where you can have a situation where you, if you have a suspicion that you could be picked up, you have a plan for your children. If your children are in school, you can have A, B, C, D. This, you go here if you don't see mom or dad. You go here if this happens. This is who you need to contact. So one thing I'm an advocate of is making a plan. Two, as far as your rights, especially if you're currently employed, knowing what your rights are. Because even though North Carolina is an at-will state, you still have rights as an employee. So if you're currently employed, your boss legally cannot ask you, I need to see your papers right now. Now, technically, people can have all sorts of reasons to let people go, and the burden of proof is on the person letting let go. However, for constitutionally protected reasons, race, religion, national origin, that cannot be a reason to be let go. So, that being said, being in touch with employment attorneys, immigration attorneys, and having a plan together for yourself is a way to safeguard yourself. Also, still remaining active in the community, even if you're not comfortable coming out to maybe a comunidad colectiva or anything else coming out, you know, still having a safety net in your community, talking to your friends, making sure people know what's going on, just in case. So I'm a big advocate of you still should not live in fear, but have a plan. And that's what.
And just to add on that, you know, if you are a person that has no status, and you know that if you get picked up, you're going to be in removal proceedings, the best thing you can do is have a relationship with the attorney already that can tell you to say nothing, have them call me. And then also, removal proceedings is one of the most grueling things to do as an immigration attorney. It costs money, it takes time, and it's a very specific argument that needs to be made. So if you go and you start sooner, and you have a relationship with attorneys, you're like, look, this is my background, can you start thinking about possible removal defenses for me now, and maybe even have that, you know, put away, because, you know, it's very difficult for an immigration attorney to do a removal defense for free, because it takes everything they have. It's a last-ditch effort, not even for you, but also for the attorney. So you might as well get him the information he needs now to start those arguments so he can put on the best defense possible for you, instead of coming at the last minute and want him to get an argument together in 2 weeks.
Yeah. With Comunidad Colectiva, are there any upcoming events? You mentioned before, but I kind of want to reemphasize for folks who may have just been turning in on the live feed, upcoming events that folks should know about, and then also post the October 5th, kind of what should Charlatans and folks in general be doing?
So one thing, or two things to point out, you know, you heard the word, which gets thrown out a lot, oh, like this illegal, right? And just to point out, like, it's a social condition. It's not a person. Like, no one, like you said, no one is illegal, right? So it's a social condition. And two is a lot of folks do have that fear. But also, one of the challenges and or one of the goals of not only our group, but I think other people that are undocumented across the country, is to see our community differently and to shift the narrative. This is a community that has strength, that has power, that we have a lot to offer, and that, like, it's I don't know anybody that lives in fear every day, honestly. Like, even though that is present, and that's a possibility, you know, whenever I interact with people that are undocumented, I'm undocumented myself, like, I didn't live in fear 24 hours. Like, you know, we laugh and, like, we cry, and then we have a lot of feelings. Maybe one of those is fear. Kind of switching on your question. Just wanted to say this because I was thinking.
No, thank you.
Well, we have that, the DACA renewal workshop on the 23rd and 24th. We are collecting funds that the organizations already got funds, and they're matching those funds that are being donated now. And so we plan to cover everybody that comes to our workshop. And that is something that we want to do for folks. Looking forward after October 5th, one is figuring out locally what is our capacity. Again, like, we're not a 501c3, we don't get thousands of dollars for this. All of this is community work, right? And it takes a lot. All of us have 9-to-5 jobs. Like, part of my job kind of deals with this, but I still gotta go to the office, you know. And so looking forward after October 5th is figuring out locally what can we do, how can we advocate from here with the limited resources that we have. We know that the conversation is probably going to be about a DREAM Act that includes a border security and enforcement. At least that's what the Republicans are saying. That's what they're going for. I think for me personally, I don't, even though that would put me in a safe position, I know a lot of people would not be safe, including part of my family. And so it's talking to folks directly that are impacted by this, figuring out what they want to do. Like, we don't want to guide the direction of this organization and not ask people what they're comfortable in doing. Sometimes it's calling, sometimes it's donating money to the organizations that do this work. Nobody has donated to us really, so other people that you can invest your funds as however you like, and so it's about what you can do, and a lot of people can do different things. So that was a long-winded answer. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
It was comprehensive.
As far as how Charlotte can make an impact on the topic, I think there need to be more community-focused resources or conversations around this. I think people, again, for me, people need to get educated, but also show them where the resources are. Show them the different law clinics that's available. I know at International House, there are plenty of different programs that they run. One of those programs are helping people become citizens. They have a citizenship program where they're showing you how to fill out the paperwork, teaching you the route, and then watching you go through the whole process. I know a personal story for me that helped my cousin become citizen a couple years ago. That's what really, really got me involved with International House. So just finding those organizations that are already doing the work, and then taking those organizations and taking them into those communities and start educating those people as to where they can find refuge or where they can go to get information on the program or, you know, becoming a citizen and things like that.
If I could add something to that, I forgot. Like, go vote. Like, there was like a voting is not the only way to keep politicians accountable, but it's an important one.
You gonna have me talking about politics,
this,
man.
This last primary, like, we only had like what, 17,000 people that voted, like less than 8%.
8%.
So some of y'all listening didn't vote, right? Who voted over here? Not me. I can't vote. So I'm saying, like, that's a lot. It's a lot you can do. And also, like, ask these city council people and the mayor, the new mayor, like, where do you stand on these issues, right? I think what we saw in the previous mayor, and I'm willing to go there, I know she was involved in International House on the board, but, like, even though she was saying that, like, we want to be a welcoming city, and we are a welcoming city, like, how can you be welcoming when you have like ICE do raids in your city and you're not standing up to them, right? And so I think it was a lack of leadership there, and I hope that this new mayor, hopefully it's a female, will show that leadership when things get hard. And so, yeah, that was my...
So I don't want to get into politics, but you do. you do make a really good point. We really need to hold our city, because a lot of times people think, oh, it's Congress, or we need to hold the federal. We need to hold people on the local side accountable. I know in District 5, if I'm correct, there's a large population of Latinos.
Right.
Yeah, people who are, those people need to go out and vote. Those people mm-hmm. need to go out and ask those local politicians, what are you doing about this program? You know, stop asking about affordable housing and all of that, because all of that wouldn't even matter if you're not here. Ask them the tough questions, because I can almost guarantee a lot of them don't know how to answer it, and that's how you determine who, you know, is the right person to vote for.
Yeah. Still care about affordable housing. Plaza Midwood. Plaza Midwood is going to go
into... Affordable housing is important.
Plaza Midwood is going to go into the east side, and then we're going to see some gentrification going around there. But that, again, that's another program. Yeah. So, just have fun.
We are getting ready for our season 2 of our podcast. Sky and I are going back to Liberia for season 2. And one of the amazing things that we need your help with is funding in every way, shape, and form. So So if you can please go to www.gofundme.com/firstgens.
That's
number one. STGENS. Foul.
Oh, we're dabbing on them?
I don't know. That's really weird.
In the feed.
Okay.
Wait,
we're dabbing on you.
I'm not dabbing.
Now you. It's too late.
Okay. You're sitting. Okay. I missed it. Okay. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you for having us.
If you enjoyed what you heard, subscribe and rate us on iTunes. Like, if you haven't already, what exactly are you waiting for? It helps other people find us. We can also be found wherever else you get your podcast. Make sure to leave a review or comment on social media. We'd love to interact with you too. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FirstGens. That's number one, STGENS. Plus, get tons of bonus content on our website, firstgenspodcast.com. First Gens was created by Perrine DeShield. The show is co-hosted by Perrine and Sky Wilson. Trey Pierce, aka Self, is our audio engineer. Nick Stubblefield is our official composer and created the lovely music. Thanks to our roundtable guest, First Gens is a proud member of HOOGA, an amazing co-working space based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you so much for all of your love and support.